Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. That's when the radio broadcast is on the air and then streaming live at those times. And we have podcasts that are located both on the homepage via SoundCloud as well as archived on the radio show's page of richarddugan.com. We're also on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, iTunes, I think there was another one, but I can't recall it off the top of my head, but you're not going to be too far off. And just as a reminder, when you are listening to one of these interviews via SoundCloud, there's a little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner. Now, normally that would probably be used for people selling you stuff. That's a link for us on our SoundCloud playlist. That is a link to our guest's website. And if you're on the radio show's page, the name of my guest is the link to their website. So you've got opportunity to go to their website, do some research, investigation, continue your evolutionary process. We encourage you to do that. And if you are listening to the radio broadcast, I remind you to go to the podcast locations and listen to the entire interview. We may have gone longer than the 50 minutes that you've been listening to on a regular basis. So please avail yourself of the entire interview if you can. And also, if you'd like to support the work that we are doing, if it resonates with you and you'd like to support us, we do have a PayPal account that you can send us your financial contributions and support to this broadcast. We are not tax deductible, so keep that in mind. Again, any support is gratefully appreciated. Even energetic support is also gratefully appreciated. We are going to be talking with a returning guest to our program. She's been with us. We've even had her husband on a couple of times in the past years, in the almost 11 years we've been doing this program. Kathleen O'Keefe Canova is my guest. We're going to be talking about dreams that can save your life. And Kathleen, I want to thank you so much for rejoining us here on the program. This is good to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. And although everybody calls me Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis, please call me Kat. All my friends do. It's easier to remember.
All right, Kat, we will try to remember to do that. Now, this whole issue of dreams, this is a subject we've talked about the latter part of 2018 into 19 with various different guests. And one aspect of it that I find interesting, one of the words that's used, precognitive. Mm-hmm. Precognitive. Let's put it this way. I think I know what dreams are. Okay. I'm pretty sure I know what nightmares are because a lot of them are made into movies that I don't watch, okay? Talk to us about, first of all, let's start there with this aspect of precognitive, precognition. Of course, that word brings up the movie, the Minority Report, where they had this group of three individuals referred to as precogs. Who could, I guess, in a manner of speaking, sort of see into the future and so forth. But in this context of our dreams that supposedly we all have and some of us remember, what's the relationship to our dreams and precognition?
Well, precognition means, you know, basically you're looking into the future. And when we have a precognitive dream, there have been a number of different arguments about that, saying, well, you don't really look into the future to see what's going on in your dream. You've got some kind of information going on. And when it comes to health, I've had doctors say to me, well, there's no such thing really as a precognitive dream. Something's going on in your body. And so it's coming out in your dreams before before the medical community is able to see any symptoms or you're able to have any symptoms. But the thing that I find so interesting about that type of an idea is, how do we explain, which is in my book, women who have had dreams for other people about their illness in a precognitive sense, meaning you have the dream that you are going to have, let's say, breast cancer, and 5 years later, you have it. And so up until those 5 years, you're really going to the doctor more often than normal and having checkups to make sure that you catch it at a very, very early stage. Or you can have a precognitive dream that's telling you you've already got it and you go to the hospital and the doctor says, you know, we did your mammograms, we did your physicals, we did a blood test, there's nothing there. Go home, you're healthy. And that dreamer will insist on a second battery of tests at that time, and the precognitive dream will be validated by a pathology report showing that yes, they do have breast cancer, but it's so early, it's not showing up in the modern tests. That's precognitive. It means something in your dream got you onto the time continuum that we hear Einstein talk about all the time, took you into the future, showed you what was going to happen, brought you back to now, and you brought the information with you. So it's pretty cool.
What's the difference between this aspect of precognition / dreams and our own intuition?
Well, I think with our own intuition, it's often a feeling. Like women will say to me, you know, this female intuition, I know something is wrong. I feel like something is wrong. And then they'll go to their doctors and they'll say, you know, I know something is wrong. I don't know exactly what, but I know something is wrong with me and I need a second set of tests. Often with precognitive, especially in the book Dreams That Can Save Your Life, the dreams, these precognitive dreams were early warning signs. So they knew when they went to the doctor that they had breast cancer. They weren't going with a female intuition of something's wrong. They went with a dream that said, you have breast cancer. So they walked into their doctor's office and said, I have breast cancer, when the doctor was saying, no, all your tests are showing you're healthy. So this intuition, and it's not just female, it's also male, because in our book, we have quite a few males who had these precognitive dreams also. Some of them, it was not so much a dream telling them exactly what was wrong, but more male intuition saying something's wrong with my body, I need a second set of tests. But intuition is not quite as specific as a precognitive dream that tells you you have this disease, go back to your doctor.
Well, I know what I find interesting is the number of diagnoses, and it seems to be increasing, of specifically, and I know that the book deals a great deal with breast cancer, but also other cancers, but it's like every time I turn around, somebody has some form of this cancer. And, of course, one of the things that I've always asked was, well, what did they call it before they called it cancer? I mean, how long has this condition of these renegade rogue cells that just run amok, you know, how long has this been going on? And probably, of course, so the answer is as long as man has been on the planet. That's probably fair to say. But I'm just wondering, when they started calling some of these conditions cancers and put all of this stuff into these categories, because when my wife was diagnosed with what was referred to as a rare form of fallopian tube cancer, and we went through the whole process that took about 9 to 12 months from the time of her diagnosis. It was just, it was unbelievable. So can you tell us, can you give us a little history in that regard?
I think cancer's been around as long as man has been around, because it's our own cells going crazy. And, you know, it's like they've got a mental illness and they just keep multiplying and multiplying. So I think that for a very long time, we didn't realize that it actually had a name. And one of the new treatments that is being used with cancer is genotreatment rather than chemo treatment. Instead of using chemotherapy, where you use all kinds of drugs, it's geno, where you're using your own cells that have been armored, as it were, given specific fighting tools to go back into your body and fight this on its own level. So I have a feeling cancer has been around forever. And, you know, we didn't really know about it. We didn't give it a name. We didn't know how to find it. We didn't have we didn't have the different tests, the blood tests, the mammograms. We didn't have that to locate it. So since we can find it easier now, we can find it earlier, and goodness knows when it shows up in our dreams and we go to the doctor before it can even be found on a mammogram and they have to use an MRI to find it, I think we have a much better chance of wiping it out, getting those cells that are over multiplying to get washed out of our body. And so that's why our dreams are so important. Our dreams are telling us that we're having these diseases and specific diseases, you know, cancer, before it's able to be picked up on current medical tests. And that seems to be important because the earlier you find any disease, no matter what it is, for instance, we had diabetes in the book. This woman kept having dreams about being diabetic. And she was actually in the very early stages of diabetes, but it had run in her family and it had been a disaster. So I think the earlier we find any disease, but especially cancer, the better our chances are of surviving it. Yeah. And I believe many of these diseases have been with us for a very, very long time, but now we've become better at labeling maybe than we used to be, and knowing what the symptoms are and knowing how to deal with it.
I know that there are a lot of different modalities to work on these things. And of course, scientists told us that everything is energy and everything is vibrating and so forth. And we'll go down that path as well. But the thing that I find interesting is that even after going through all that we went through, and I will tell you that I would not wish chemotherapy on my worst enemy. That is just awful. After watching my wife go through that for 6 months, oh my gosh. I'm grateful that it was there, that she went through it and so forth. But at the same time, one of the other frustrations was the fact that the doctor that she was seeing at the time, she would go to him almost every other day saying, I'm having these symptoms and da-da-da-da-da. And he says, well, it's nothing. They never did what they needed to do to research it sufficiently or to diagnose it sufficiently before it probably became what it became, what they said it became. The other frustration was some of the statistical information that we were given. And I know that this is a hard one for a lot of folks, but at the time, this was 2001. They told us that it was a rare form. I just happened to have a friend I was working with, and I was sharing all of this with him. He said, well, yeah, well, my mom, she had that, and so forth. And I said, oh, really? So how is she? I mean, you know, how long ago was this? Oh, that was 9 years ago, and she's doing just fine. And I thought, okay, that's great. And then I found out how rare it was. At the time, there were only 1,200 women in this country, I guess since they had been taking stats, who had had this. And I thought, well, how in the world do they have any information on this rare form when there were only 1,200 women? And then when we questioned them on some other areas, they said that there's a 70% recurrence if you stop your chemo. And of course, then I got to thinking, well, wait a minute, it's a rare form, only 1,200 women, 70% recurrence rate. Can I see all of the information you've gathered on all of the people who had this? Because I want to see of the 30% who didn't have it recur. I want to know what their lifestyles were, what they ate, drank, where they went, all these different things. And then the 70% so that I can see if my wife falls into that category. Because a lot of this information, this is what is so frustrating for a lot of us. A lot of this information is so difficult to parse, you know? How do you, or do you even bother at this point because of the work that you've been involved in? And of course, this wonderful book that we're talking about in reference to dreams, how do you deal with, I don't want to say the misinformation, but the vast amount of information that sometimes is really difficult to put together and understand and relate to one's own situation.
Well, you know, in my case, I think that I relied, yes, I did rely on my doctors, but I relied probably even more on my spiritual beliefs. And in my case, my spirit guides that came into my dreams, they often told me not to take certain chemos. and they were right. Some of the chemos that the doctors were pushing for me to take had really bad side effects. And now there are actually lawsuits out on them. And some of the chemos that my doctors wanted me to take have since been found to not work. And so I think that that's where we have to tap into our intuition, our spirit guides, and ask ourselves what we feel about the information that we're being given. Because as I often tell women that I help during these times, when you just put yourself in completely into your doctor's hands, and you shut your own emotions off, and you shut your intuition off, you're not really playing as a team. You're just being the guinea pig. And I refused to just be the guinea pig. I wanted to be part of the team that would decide on my life, basically. And not all doctors are keen on that, let me tell you. They just want, because they're following protocol that the hospital has decided should be followed, and they're not allowed to really deviate from that in any way, in any form or any way. So when you come along and you say, well, I want to be part of the team, and I want to know what it is that you're going to do, and I want to know what the different outcomes are going to be, they're not always happy with that, but it's a necessary step for the patient. And so that's where your intuition comes in, your dreams come in for guidance. Everything you possibly can use, you use at that point to keep yourself alive and to give yourself the best chances of survival, no matter what the hospital says. Because in the end, and it's kind of hard to say this, but in the end, you have to make a decision that you can live and die with. And I told the doctors when they would tell me, no, you have to take this chemo. And I'd say, no, I don't. And by the way, it didn't come back. So I didn't have to take that chemo. You know, there comes a point where you have to say enough is enough, because the chemo sometimes is worse than the disease. Mm-hmm. But you want to make sure that you're making a decision you can not only live with, but can die with also, because in the end, you are really the one responsible for yourself and your life. Well, so you kind of have to work together.
Yeah. And I remember at some point early in the process, and watching her going through what she was, both emotionally as well as physiologically, mm-hmm. I actually asked her point blank. I said, do you want to live or do you want to die?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may not like the choice that you the decision you make, but I'm going to support you in it, whether I like it or not, because this is your life, you know, and this is your process. This is your path. And of course, I was unaware that she'd already made the decision several weeks earlier, because it was probably she was diagnosed in July. And I think I asked her that question in early September of that year. And so you're right. It is up to us to determine. And I think that's probably a good place for us to start taking a look at one aspect that you mentioned, and that is the guidance that is available to us, not only through what you referred to as, you know, you had your spirit guides. Other people will have other sort of, so to speak, outside support, if you will, but also this aspect of dreams. Is there a way for us to, before we lay our head down on the pillow, to call forth dreams that could give us that information? And, we're talking about seeing into the future in the manner of speaking. Is there a way for us to call upon the universe to say, look, I really would like to know, so that either I can do nothing and just let it take over and I'll transition, or so that I can do the things that I need to do now to maybe, because it's kind of been put this way, that certain individuals have the potential for certain conditions, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're going to get it, but that they have the potential, and that if they go down a particular path, that potential may manifest in reality. Whereas if they go down a different path, it won't happen. Mm-hmm. So is there a way to sort of, I don't know if the word's control, or, you know, say, I would like to see the good channel, the healthy channel of my dreams in this regard.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the, yeah, you hit that right on. It's when we come to that fork in the road and we're not sure which path we need to take. One could be positive. One could be transitioning out. Yes, there is something that we can do. And I tell people this all the time. We're all born dreamers. Everything alive dreams. It's a case of whether or not we remember our dreams. And there are ways to help remember our dreams. But we're all born with spirit guides. We're their job. We are their job. And they take that job very, very seriously. Some of us are more in tune to them than others, but we can all tap into that. And one of the ways that we do that is at night, before you go to bed, before you put your head on that pillow, as you said, you set that intention. And setting an intention means you just say, look, I really would like to meet my spirit guide. I'd like to know who that person is. I'd like to remember them and bring them out with me. I'd like to work with them. And the universe is always listening. And that's part of the universal law of permission. Our spirit guides cannot come in and bug us. They're not allowed to do that. We have to ask them for help, and then they'll be there. And those guides could show up as your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your deceased best friend. You never know who they're going to be. Mine just happened to be Franciscan monks. And I have no idea why I would have Franciscan monks, but they really did catch my attention in that dream. I remember standing there the first time going, what? What is this? So before you go to sleep at night, set that intention and then put a piece of paper and pencil beside your bed so that when you wake up in the morning, you can immediately write down your dream before you forget it, or have your phone there so that you can record it on your smartphone. Have some way of recording your dream, and you're going to meet those guides. And those guides go back and forth on the time continuum all the time. They know the future. They know the past. They know the now, because everything is a big now to them. And when you come to that fork in the road where you're not sure which path you should take, they will make sure you take the right one, because we're all here for a purpose. Even if your parents told you you happened in the backseat of the Ford by accident, you're accidentally here on purpose. And you're not supposed to die until you fulfill that purpose. We just happen to be human, and stuff happens, illness happens, but that doesn't mean you can't come up, you know, go be able to work through it and continue your purpose.
Yeah, it's a challenge. There's no question about it, because of the fact that we live where we live. Mm-hmm. And we are faced with a myriad of different influences in our lives. You know, I mean, there are some people who have been living in the same place for generations, never had any problems. All of a sudden, you know, now everybody in the family's got this or that or the other. And, you know, you sit there, and I can appreciate the frustration and wanting to find the person or company or corporation responsible for maybe contaminating the water, the soil. You know, I mean, we've heard the stories over the decades, you know, in different places where there's lead in the water, or there's this in the soil, and the Love Canal and Flint, Michigan, and so forth. And it's like, okay, I understand, you know, the whole aspect of justice, but how is that helping you to heal? And what are you doing to heal yourself? But a lot of times what happens is we don't even know that we've got a problem until it's too late. And that's where the dreams come in, right?
Yes. They can give us that information when everything is at such an early stage that it you know, you get over it very quickly. You're taking care of it before it becomes some big monster that could take over your body. And that's where our dreams come in.
Well, it's to me, fascinating stuff. And we're going to talk more about this as we continue here on the program. We're talking with Kathleen Kat O'Keefe Kenevis, and we're talking about the dreams that can save your life. I have to say, Kat, that, you know, it's more of a rarity that I remember my dreams. And that's something that we may want to also discuss and talk about on the program as well, because I know that a lot of people have the same problem, remembering their dreams. And for me, it would be, I've heard some of the techniques for trying to remember, you know, putting a pad by your bedside and so forth. I have a logistics issue in that regard for anything of that nature, because I have five cats that are roaming the house all night long. And I never know where they're going to be at any given time. Plus, then I have to turn a light on, which will wake the wife, and da da da. And of course, by the time you have, let's say, well, you go into, why don't you go into the other room there, and you can turn the light on and so forth. And sometimes, by the time you get to the other room, you've forgotten the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Any techniques that you have devised to not only elicit them, as we just talked about, but if you're going to elicit them, it would be helpful to remember them. Because I don't think they've developed the coax cable connection to the back of the head yet to tap in and record the dreams onto your computer, or your DVD, or something of that nature, or TiVo.
That's true, and I've got three cats roaming all night long. There's three Siamese, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, I do have some ideas on that, and one of the ideas is, if you don't remember your dreams, sometimes it's because there's really nothing that you should remember. I tell this to people all the time. They'll say, you know, I'll have all these dreams I remember, and then I'll have a bunch and I just won't remember them. Sometimes our dreams are just meant to give us a chance to relax, get out of stress from during the day, and just watch a movie. Sit back, you know, if we could eat popcorn in our dream, we'd be eating popcorn. You're not really supposed to remember it. You're just supposed to relax and get a break from life. But when we do have a dream that is really one of those wow dreams, and you wake up going, gosh, that was a bizarre dream. It had this and this and this in it. If you can remember what the this and this and this is, you need to write it down. So one of the easiest ways to remember your dreams, if you want to, is by, you know, using the word "so dream." By using that 7-letter acronym, SO DREAM, it can help you go through the motions to remember your dreams. The first one is to set your intention, and we kind of went over that, where, you know, that law of attraction, where you lie down in bed, you say, I really want to remember my dreams tonight. I just want to start working on remembering dreams. And so you can even write your intention down. I would like to meet my spirit guide in my dream tonight. Write it on a piece of paper and have that next to your bed. And you can have a little tiny flashlight next to your bed if you need to, so that you can sit up in the middle of the night when your guides wake you up, so that you will remember the dream, and you just write it down with the little flashlight. I used to do that with Peter all the time, and it really didn't disturb him, but I was able to get my dreams down. And then organize yourself before you go to sleep. Put your dream journal, your pen, or your recording device, or your flashlight, whatever you need, right beside your bed, because like you said, if you've got to get up and go in the other room or move around, you're going to forget it. And if your dream awakens you, it may be telling you to write it down or record something really relevant right then. And then, of course, the D in So Dream is know that you do dream. Everything does dream. There are research that shows everything dreams. It's a case of remembering your dream. So in order to begin that process of fulfilling your intention, you want to tell yourself that you do dream, don't, you know, if you keep saying, well, I don't dream, your brain's going to go, oh, well, we don't dream. So we're not going to give you any of that information. You want to say, yes, I do dream and I will remember. And then R, remain in your sleep position. And this is important because, as you said, also when you, you know, sit up in bed and you go into the other room and then you look for something to write down your dream on, you're going to forget it. Dreams are very elusive. So stay in the same position in your bed, open up your eyes, and then reach over and get your pencil and paper or your little flashlight, or get up very, very slowly. And then what you want to do is write down the emotions immediately. What were you feeling when you woke up? Were you happy? Were you sad? Were you frightened? Did you think that you had a nightmare, or did you have a good dream? Write that emotion down, because that's very important. It's going to tell you about your dream. Obviously, if you had a nightmare, you're not going to be laughing when you wake up. And then A, add to your dream by asking what colors, what sounds, words, were people in your dream. That's really important. Mm-hmm. Did you have people in your dream? Did you have animals, plants, signs or symbols? Did you see the sun? Was there rain? You want to write that down. And then the meaning, M for meaning. What do those things in your dreams mean to you? For instance, if it was a person and you saw your grandmother, what did that mean? What does your grandmother mean to you? Does it mean love? Does it mean wisdom? Does it mean you're going to have to sit in the corner with a dunce cap on your head? You know, everything has a meaning, and those meanings are specific to you. Mm-hmm. You know, if one person sees ice cream in their dreams, they're happy because they love ice cream. Another person who is lactose intolerant is not going to be happy mm-hmm. with seeing ice cream in their dreams. So the meanings are specific to you. And so then give your dream a title. And this is really important, because during the day, you could have a daydream that could tell you more information about your night dream, stuff that you couldn't remember and pull out. Write it down on anything, because I have to tell you, when I have my dream journal, there's pieces of toilet paper taped in there. There's receipts taped in there, where I would just grab a piece of paper and write down information when I was going through my treatment that a daydream would remind me I had in a night dream, but I forgot to write down when I woke up. Hmm.
Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, we're going to take a break here. We're going to run over that acronym one more time when we come back from the break and continue on. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking about dreams that can save your life, and we encourage you to pick up a copy, because who knows, it could save your life. If you are aware of your dreams, you're picking up on what's going on, hey. Listen to those dreams and so forth. And we're going to talk about interpretations as well. As we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are here with Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas, and we're talking about dreams that can save your life. I don't know why. What just came to mind was a life preserver, you know? It's like, speaking of daydreaming, you know, and that's one of the things, too, that I find so interesting is the different types of dreams. I have one that I've sort of been sharing on this program with people because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we're all trying to shift from, at least the people that I associate with, we're trying to shift from the survival mode mm-hmm. to a new word that I've coined, thrival mode.
I like that, thrival.
And yes, I would love to have, like maybe a lot of us would love to have, 6 digits in the bank account before the decimal point. Maybe 7, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely not. But at the same time, it's like, boy, you know, I'm here, it's 2019 and I'm doing well, and I've got a great new vehicle that we got back in December, and we're living in a beautiful city, and, you know, and life is good and we're both employed and we have wonderful animals. And, you know, you go down this list of things that you're grateful for, you know, so how could you want more, you know? And I know that this particular dream, there is no visual to it. At least not until after there's a visual now because I see it in my head because every time I say it, I see it in my head. But it was auditory. Now, I've only had one other auditory dream, if you will, that I can remember going back to 2004. My wife and I were in Ireland and we laid down to go to sleep and I heard this voice. In the dream, didn't see anything, just heard this voice of a dear friend of mine who had passed away in our home the year before. And he said, "Don't say anything bad in front of Bridget." And I'll add also to that, that my wife's maiden name is McDonough. So a few days later, we find ourselves off the coast of Ireland, the west coast of Ireland, in the Aran Islands, we're on Inishmore, and we're traveling through the area they call the seven churches, and we're both enamored by the way that they bury people, you know, in the walls of the churches, of course, in the floors and so forth. And I'm over here taking a picture of this big stone circle, and I just jokingly say, "Oh, yeah, this was the first wheel." My wife comes over and says, "You need to come over here, and you need to take a look at this." So I walk over where she is. She says, look down at this tombstone. It was flat, okay? It was one of those flat tombstones.
Mm-hmm.
Carved into it was the name Bridget McDonough. I put my hand over my mouth and walked away.
Very good.
Yeah. Now, the one dream I was talking about that I've had recently has to do, it's at $800,000. That's mm-hmm. all I heard, $800,000. So I keep repeating that in my head, you know? And, of course, now I can see it. But someone said to me, because I was sharing with them how I felt, how wonderful I felt about our new truck, you know, that we've been wanting for the longest time. They said, whenever you start getting into a situation where you, maybe the situation's sort of bringing you down, think about the truck. Think about how you felt or how you feel in reference to that. Because even when I think of the monthly payment, which is a little higher, and the cost overall of the truck, which is a little higher, I still feel good about it. It's incredible, right? How could you feel good? It's like, well, because it's providing us something that we didn't have before. It's fun, okay, and all of those kinds of things. And so I brought that to the 800,000, and it's like, yeah. And then, of course, I've also heard it said, and feel it as if you have it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah, that's the feeling, you know. But audible dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had those?
Oh, I did. Yes. And they're actually in the book too. Sometimes people just heard things, you know, and they're important. What it does is sometimes when you're really, really stressed, Richard, and you know, you fall asleep, you go into such a deep, deep sleep that yes, you're getting information in that deep, deep sleep. Your guides are working with you and it's hard to bring it out. But sometimes when you're walking around during the day and you're depressed because something's going on in your life, you know, illness or illness of a loved one, which is sometimes worse than having an illness of your own because you're out of control completely. Getting that voice that says everything's going to be okay. None of this is going to matter. 800,000. You know, it's reassuring that, yes, we are connected to that higher power. And we do have someone watching over us and know we are not alone. So that is so important. And, you know, getting back to your previous story about your wife, when she saw the gravestone in Ireland, one of the stories in the book that I just found so fascinating is a woman had a dream telling her that she had illness. And what the illness was. It was breast cancer, I believe. And she kept saying, I'm not sure I understand what you're trying to tell me in the dream. Because let's face it, sometimes when you're told you've got a condition in a dream, you're like, nah, I don't want to believe that. I'm not really understanding what it is you're saying. And she kept saying that in the dream to the spirit guide that was saying, you've got an illness. You need to go to the doctor. You need to get this test. So finally she said, you know what? Give me a dream that's a little more specific. And so that night when she went to sleep, in the dream, her spirit guide took her to a graveyard, like the one that you were in Ireland. And the spirit guide pointed to a grave that had her name on it, just like what you were talking about in Ireland. And the spirit guide said, do you see all those daisies on that grave? And she said, yes. And the spirit guide said, if you don't get to your doctor tomorrow and get those tests, you're going to be the one under the ground pushing up daisies. So she got the dream immediately. Sometimes that auditory can be very specific.
Yeah. You know, I've even jokingly said, you know, that we have this, you know, we have our intuition, right? Mm-hmm. And I encourage people to listen to and follow their intuition. And I jokingly say, and if you're going to listen but not follow, why are you bothering listening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However, it isn't even a question of that, because a lot of times, you know, it's persistent, very persistent. I've had those experiences. How about you?
Yes. Well, you know, when those dreams, when there's information, they are persistent. They're in regular night dreams. They're in daydreams. They're in voices. They're in everything. They just won't leave you alone, because if they do, you could die. But I think what's really interesting here too, Richard, is the fact that you had a precognitive voice. It told you,
yeah,
don't say anything.
Yeah.
And you didn't know what it meant. But until you were faced with the situation, and then it made perfect sense. And that's the way it happens.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily make sense at the time, but it will very soon. And then you go back and you remember what that voice said, or that dream said, or that dreamscape was in your mind. And it makes perfect sense. And then you act on it. You put your hand over your mouth and walked away.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing sometimes, because you know you think about that, and you go, what was that all about, mm-hmm. kind of thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's very interesting to follow through on some of those things. When you are, shall we say, conversing with or communicating with or in touch with the spirit world, your guides, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
How does that, because I know a lot of folks, they're, you know, being the type of person who I myself was, not only born and raised in the Roman Catholic Church, but also working for a Christian radio station, where that wasn't something that was encouraged, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you could pray, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it really wasn't like a two-way street. Do you find that for you, it is a two-way street, that there's like a conversation going on and you have a dialogue? Or is it just, you know, they give you impressions or guidance, what have you?
Yes, it definitely is a two-way street. And you know, I know exactly what you're saying, and I find that very confusing, because dreams are throughout the Bible. They are all throughout the Bible. And I did, on my own radio show, I did a panel of reverends, and I had them each pick their favorite precognitive dream in the Bible to discuss. And I've got to tell you that that show went viral, but mine happened to be Daniel with King Nebuchadnezzar, because Daniel actually dreamed the king's dream when the king wanted his court to tell him what the dream meant. Dreams have been in the Bible since before man was even reading the Bible. So I don't understand why the church has problems with that, other than they're afraid people are going to get duped by that, because the Bible also says, you know, beware of soothsayers.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think that our dreams with our spirit guides who come from God are very personal. And they are a way that we open up the sacred dream doors to the divine. And we get that information from God. If we're not supposed to have it, he doesn't give it. And if we get it, it's because we need it. And it's up to us to believe or not. Now, I don't believe in blind belief for anything. And fortunately, God knows that. So he does have to kind of prove stuff to me, because that way I'm not going to get duped mm-hmm. by some soothsayer. And I think that everybody listening to this program can say the same thing to God. Look, I believe in you. I love you. I know you're there, but you know, I don't believe in blind faith. I don't believe in myself enough to believe everything that I hear and see from other people. So I need your guidance, and you'll get it.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why the church would have a problem with that, because, like I said, the Bible is full of dreams, precognitive dreams.
Well, I think that part of the, and it's just my own observations, part of the problem is the fact that they then don't have control over what it is that you believe. And that's been the sticking point for centuries, regardless of what the religion or what the philosophy, as I like to call it, is. Mm-hmm. I don't know how well schooled I am, but I do know that I have read a lot. I have met a lot of different people. I've had a lot of different interesting experiences with different groups of people in different philosophies. Some of them were very wonderful and comfortable and heartwarming, and others were not so much so. I do have to say that one of the neatest experiences that I had, and this was when I had just met my present wife, and she was involved with and participating in what she always referred to as the practice. And, of course, this was Tai Chi, and this was with a gentleman who was the co-author of a wonderful book called the name of the gentleman was Sunyata Saraswati, and Jewel in the Lotus. That was the title of the book, Jewel in the Lotus. Anyway, so she invited me to join her for one of these sessions in the practice, right? Well, I'd never done Tai Chi. And we were all outside. This was back in Phoenix, Arizona. We were all outside on a beautiful spring afternoon, blue skies, green grass we were all standing on. They started to play the music, and the people started moving in unison along with Sunyata. And I'm just like, okay, I'm looking at everybody else trying to follow the movements, right? And it was one of the more awkward times. It was like, one of those things where, no, I don't dance. No, please don't pull me out there because I don't dance. And finally, Sunyata came up to me and he said, don't worry about it. Don't try to match everybody else's movements. Just let the energy and the music take you however you choose to move. And that was such a freeing statement that he made to me that I began to feel much more comfortable. I know that we come across those kinds of situations throughout our lives, and sometimes we won't participate in a particular or get involved in a particular situation because we think it's going to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Help me to maybe clarify for our listeners. These voices, whether it's your intuition or your guides or what have you, they will never put you in harm's way, but they may put you in challenging situations. Is that a fair estimate?
It is. They're going to make you step out of your comfort zone, to put it mildly. You're not going to be in your cushy box. And that may be one of the challenges that you're having. You're too comfortable where you are. You're no longer experiencing. And this world is all about experience. So yes, those voices, I mean, look at Joan of Arc. She led all these armies and the church was behind her until all the wars were over. And then the church felt that they couldn't control her, so they had to get rid of her. Fortunately, today, the church doesn't have quite that much power. And church is not necessarily your God. You have to remember, I always look at it as God is my spirituality, God is my belief. Church is the business aspect of that. And so believe in your beliefs and believe in your spirit guides when you hear them talk to you. And you'll know, because if they give you information and then it's true, it proves true, you know that that was right. And I know a lot of people are frightened. Well, what if it's the devil who's talking to me? I've actually had people say that to me, and I can understand their fear. What if you're trying to be tricked by the devil? Simply say, if you're not my spirit guide, who has been sent to me by God, get thee behind me. Mm-hmm. And bother me no more. Because again, that rule of permission, they're not allowed to bother you without your permission. So don't give it. And if it's an angel, they're going to appreciate what you just did.
Yeah. And I have to say that, as I said, I ran into this quite often when I was working in the 80s and early 90s there at that station. And at the same time, I was privileged to be given the opportunity to do interviews, even such as this, of a more metaphysical nature, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Because I knew where the ownership, management, advertisers, programmers, and listeners were coming from. So I was able to conduct interviews like this using the terminology that was acceptable. Mm-hmm. You know, and also not trying to be disrespectful, trying to just kind of give people a different perspective, which is now what we do with this program, which is wide open, and we can pretty much, you know, say whatever we want and put forth and share the guests that we do. You know, and in our day and time, and I find this really interesting, and I'm going to use this example and have you sort of elaborate on this as far as how maybe we should approach some of these things. I don't know if you saw the latest story in the news, and normally we don't talk about current events, but this kind of applies here, as mm-hmm. how times they have changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that you Peter used to probably watch in the 90s. You used to watch that television series called Seinfeld, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the young people of 2018, 2019, they're saying that it is one of the most offensive programs, racist and sexist and homophobic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that it should be banned, you know, kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that the same way I look at those people who are upset with and have had new versions of Mark Twain's Tom Sawyer rewritten and take out the one word that nobody wants to, you know, don't utter that one word.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, but those were the times in which that television program was produced, and it was fine. It was not a big deal. And I didn't see that they were trying to be disrespectful. It was kind of showing more the comedy aspect of, you know, four people who, for whatever reason, were just not able to fully connect into society.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had their foibles, just like we all do. But in terms of this whole spiritual aspect of dreams and spirit guides and intuition and all of this stuff that does not conform to the, maybe in your particular community, you know, the I don't know if I want to say standards and mores per se, but the beliefs and or the doctrine and or dogma that's being promoted from the pulpit and so forth. What has been your experience with people who have these very strong and staunch beliefs, or has the universe spared you by not bringing those people into your circle?
Oh, no. The universe brings them into my circle. Absolutely. They bring them there so that they can, you know, be shaken out of their comfort zone. And they may not agree with what I'm saying. That may frighten them. It may upset them. But it's seeds. It's seeds of thought. And so I listen to what they say, and then they listen to what I say, and we part friends. There's a lot of hate mongering going on right now. There's a lot of let's change history. And I think that it's really important that the world understand that honesty is going to offend somebody at some time. And it doesn't mean that you have to put yourself into a perfect little bubble and live there in utopia, because even utopia is going to start to come under attack by other people. Mm. So take life as a grain of salt and embrace everything, because in everything there is a lesson to be learned, and it's taught different ways. And the more lessons you learn, the better the chances are you're going to survive this world.
Well, and of course, that's, you know, we want to, of course, not just survive this world, but thrive in it, because this is where we live. This is where we live. How have you been guided to thrive, to make that next step and move forward? How, and maybe I should just expand that to say, how have you and Peter made that step forward?
Well, a lot of it is in connecting. I mean, the universe will bring the right people to you at the right time. Dr. Larry Burke and I found each other online, basically, and he works at, he was chief of radiology at Duke University Medical, and he's now doing his second research on dreams that are diagnosed, that diagnose breast cancer. And so we're going to be doing the second book. So what I'm doing to make a difference is writing these books, coming on to radio shows like yours, Richard, where I'm able to explain to people that our dreams are doorways from the divine. And they're very important to us on the earth plane to keep us connected to whatever it is we're supposed to do. And I speak to groups, and I have my own radio show, the Cat Cannabis Show, which is a video podcast. And I do whatever it is I need to do to bring light into some very dark areas of the world.
Well, and you've done that on this program on a couple of times in the past, and we're grateful, of course, for the fact that you've been a part of what we've been doing here for almost 11 years, and hope we can continue doing this for another 11. I sort of joke, but not really, that I have to outlive my great-grandmother, who lived to be 100, and I'm at 59, so I've got 41 years minimum, 41 minimum years, okay? So I want to keep doing this and bringing people forward that the listeners can go to the websites and connect with and begin the process of just moving forward. Because I'll tell you, in spite of some of the things that I have been, that have been shared with me about a lot of the upheaval and the turmoil that we've got going on, especially in this country, but literally around the world, you know, it everybody that's involved is a human being. And I realize that that is a tough one for some people to swallow when you start naming names and saying, oh, no, that's no human being. That's a beast. You know, that's a this and that. It's like, no, they're all human beings and they're all on their path. And that's, again, that's another tough one to take, because we don't want to accept the fact that the tyrants and the wealthy hoarders and mean, nasty politicians and whatever other types of people, they're still human beings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like, again, that's a hard one. That's a hard pill to swallow. You know, it's like, but, you know, if we would look in the mirror at ourselves, you know, we're all self-critical.
Mm-hmm.
I had an interview. Yeah, I had a gentleman on the program not long ago who, he has this program. It's a 21-day program, and he puts this rubber band. It's one of those, you know, rubber bracelets on his wrist. And every time he has, and this is the way we phrased it in the program, every time he has a self-deprecating thought or word, he moves that band from one wrist to the other, right? Now, it's a 21-day program, and he's been working on it for 6 months. And the process is that you get through an entire day without making a self-deprecating thought or a statement, a utterance, right? Do you know how many days he's gotten through in six months?
Imagine.
Four.
Oh, he's gotten four. Good for him. I'm impressed.
A whole 4 days, and he's been doing it for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Now, first of all, I applaud the man for his ingenuity in coming up with this kind of a process. But even more so, as you just did, for the fact that he actually made it 4 days.
Mm-hmm. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Now, what an exercise that would be for each one of us. Find your own trigger, whether it's a rubber bracelet on the left wrist or whatever, that reminds you, because I remember working here at this radio station and the one guy who used to do the afternoons when I first started here, constant self-deprecation, both on the air and off. And it's like, I didn't really want to be around this guy. He was a nice guy most of the time, you know, really nice guy, right? Mm-hmm. But when he got into those places. So when we look in the mirror, and my point being, going back to the rest of the world, if we can't forgive them, if we can't allow them and accept them to roll through their part in this society, in this world, then how can we give ourselves that same freedom to do it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. And nobody is a harsher judge on yourself than you. Let's face it, because you know everything about you. So if you want to go into that area and be judgmental on yourself, you can certainly do a number on yourself.
Yeah.
I think that I really do believe in mirror therapy. And when it comes to the point where you're not feeling good about yourself, you need to sit yourself down in front of the mirror, look into your own eyes, which are the windows to your soul, and ask yourself why. Ask yourself why. Are you hearing echoes from other people who were maybe trying to beat you down in order to stand on you, to make themselves seem higher? And start loving yourself. Look in the mirror. Look into your eyes and keep saying, I love you. I love you. And if you find that you want to keep looking away, you keep saying it until you embrace it and you don't look away.
Yeah, and again, it's a tough one. There's no question about it. But, you know, we've got to do something to begin this process. And it's up to each one of us. How does that phrase go? You know, be the change you want to be, that you want to see, you know.
So, if you want to change the world, start right now and just change one thing about you.
Yeah.
You've made the change.
You know, I've shared before the fact that there are these wives' tales, you know, that are out there. Mm-hmm. And I found two that are lies. They're absolute lies. The first one is sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Mm.
And words have power.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is you can't change other people. Well, I found that's not true. By what you just said, we can change other people. However, we don't do it with that intent. We go ahead and we change ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do it. And then that's going to, in turn, change other people.
Yes, because they have to respond to the new change.
Yeah.
That's psychology 101. If you want to change somebody else's behavior, change yours first.
Mm-hmm.
And then they must respond to that change, and that will change theirs. And sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's actually sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will break my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunate. I've even had this experience in my life, Kat, that I can spend 10 years supporting someone, lifting someone up, you know, encouraging them and so forth, and I can undo it all in 10 seconds. And that's the amazing thing, you know, and that's the power of words. And that's why I've always wondered how it is that especially politicians can say the things that they can say during a campaign, let alone while in office, but during a campaign about other people that we have heard over the decades, not just modern history, and yet expect no repercussion because the universe doesn't work that way. You know, and so that's one of the things to keep in mind. Kathleen, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and sharing your stories about the dreams that can save our lives. The book is available at your website. And that website, by the way, I'm going to go over here if I can get there, because I actually have it pulled up here, which is KathleenO'KeefeCanovas.com. We will have a link to your website, so we won't have to go through the process of spelling out KathleenO'KeefeCanovas.com. We won't do that again. We'll just link to you so that people can get straight there. We encourage people to do that. And I thank you so much. And I hope that maybe one of these days, both you and Peter will make your way here to Santa Barbara. We'll maybe sit down and do an interview in studio and continue to talk about these things.
Oh, we'd love to do that. I love Santa Barbara and I love your wine up there.
Yes.
Best wine.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I prefer the whites. My wife loves the reds. So
I love the reds too. Your wife and I have a lot in common.
There you go. And before we let you go, first of all, I want to remind our listeners about the podcast at SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, and also on the homepage of RichardDugan.com, as well as the radio show's page of RichardDugan.com. And if you'd like to support this radio program, we encourage you to do so. There is a PayPal link on both the homepage and the missions page. If this should be your first time listening to this broadcast, go to the missions page while you're listening. Read what we're all about. And if it resonates with you, if you like it, hey, if you can help us and support us, we are grateful for that. Three final questions for you, and they are in this order. Who is Kathleen O'Keefe Canovas?
Well, Kathleen O'Keefe Canovas is a dreamer who loves to use her dreams to help others.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to fulfill my life destiny and my life purpose and have fun while I'm doing it.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to bring the divine onto the earth through dreams.
Kathleen O'Keefe Canovas, thank you so much for joining us again on the program, and we do look forward to having you back maybe later this year to talk more about these things.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. This has been great.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Remember, I would highly recommend going to the podcast to hear the entire interview. And until next time, love Talal.